Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 128. My name is Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And the holidays are over.
They are.
Thank goodness.
We survived.
Barely.
And it is now 2025.
Barely. You guys, the month of December kicked my ass. And I feel like I'm just starting to recover. Like, today is the first day in almost a month. I'm not even kidding you. Actually, probably exactly a month that I felt normal. So
between stress and like feeling ill and not, it's just
like
all this
getting
stuff.
Sick and like some, you know, my mom coming to town, which was great, but you know,
it's
when
stressful.
When you have like somebody else in your house who's not normally there, plus all the holiday stuff going on, running around, and general anxiety that's hard to deal with on a regular basis, and.
Yep.
You know, just like,
then
oh
there's
my
the general
gosh.
State of the world.
Yeah.
Which also doesn't help.
Which, like, man, it's been hard to stay afloat. I'm really hoping January goes better than December.
Agreed.
So far, it's been a little rough, but maybe we're coming out of that. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
At least 2025 will bring us Percy Jackson.
That's right.
So, we have that to look forward to.
And I mean, a possible Lions Super Bowl.
Yeah. I mean, that would be really cool.
I'm just saying, number one in the NFC.
Yeah.
They get a bye week.
I know. I was very excited.
That's, we're recording this on Sunday. It's their bye week. And I'm so happy for them. And it's so, yay. But yeah, nonetheless, I know.
Not that it means as much to you at all, really, but Ohio State did win the semifinals.
They're
going to the national championship.
It means a lot to my family.
Yes.
So we'll let them be very happy.
You are one of the nicer Michigan fans.
It's ridiculous. That's okay. I've met some really nasty Ohio State fans the other day. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I'll never forget the one college OSU Michigan game. I was the only Michigan fan. I sat on the floor of my own living room, and everyone around me, on all the couches and chairs and whatever, they were all Ohio State fans. I was the only one in the room. And it was a game that Michigan won, or that Michigan was doing really well, I forget. I don't know if they won or if it was just, like, they performed really well. So, like, every time Michigan did anything, it was, like, crickets. And I'm just, like, sitting there going, like, yeah. And everyone around me is, like, screaming at, it was back in the Lloyd Carr days, like, screaming at Lloyd Carr, like, you're a cheater! And I'm like, no, he's not. Like, you know, it's so funny. So funny. Yeah. I look back on it now and I laugh, but that day,
yeah, that would be tough.
And it was not all, like, my friends. Like, they were my friends' friends, because I lived in that apartment with three other people during college, so, like, it was their boyfriends and friends and whatever, so I didn't know all these people either, and they were, like, not being kind.
Yeah.
So, it's fine. It's fine. I survived. Adversity teaches you stuff, whatever. but, yeah, it has, yeah. I have enough family, and my husband's family are all Michigan fans, because they're from Michigan.
Okay.
Like, they're from Saginaw
and
whatever.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, they're all Michigan and Detroit fans, so that helps, at least, you know.
Yeah. My boyfriend always laughs at me, because whenever they, like, fight on the field or, like, do something that gets them a penalty that's like, you really didn't have to do that. I'm like, just be nice. And he was like, no, like, this is football. And I was like, but I like when they're nice to each other.
So, there's been a rash of, especially with the Vikings game being as, like, important as it was.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I've seen so many terrible fans in, like, comment sections and stuff just talking absolute garbage at each other about each other's teams, and I'm like, guys.
It also didn't help that one Detroit fan yelled Vikings suck during the moment of silence.
I heard that. Like, what are we doing?
That's
like, we're
just
better than that.
Yeah.
Come on. It bothers me because I don't want people thinking that's what we're like.
Yeah.
Every time I've had friends who are not Lions fans, who've gone up to games to watch the other team, whether it's Green Bay or one of my friend's kids is he a Broncos fan? I don't remember. But, like, it was a while back that he took his kid to a game and he was like, I was so disappointed by the Lions fans around me. And I was like, it depends on what section you're in. Yeah. Like, every game I've ever gone to, there have been a couple of drunks, but everyone else around us has been super cool and chill. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe it's just what happens when you're up in the nosebleeds versus down in the nicer sections.
Yeah.
Maybe if you have better tickets, you're more of a jerk. I don't know. Means you have more money, so, like, all the poor folks
more entitled
in the nosebleeds are like, hey, how's it going? Anybody
we're
need
just
a beer?
Happy to be here.
Right, exactly. We all got tickets today. We're super, yeah. So, I don't know. I've never had that experience with Lions fans, but you know, with, it happens at every stadium. You can't tell.
Yeah, I mean, all fans are like that because there's an asshole in every crowd.
Exactly. Like, you go to Green Bay, you can't tell me that a Lions fan in Green Bay is going to get treated well. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And I heard that a couple of the Vikings, like, significant others had rough games there, and I felt really bad because I'm like, I don't, you know, first of all, you have to be able to take a little bit of heckling if you go on the road for a game.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are, you're going to get heckled. Now, if they're being downright cruel or mean, that's different.
Yeah.
But, like, saying, you know, if it's not during a moment of silence,
yeah,
and they're saying, like, boo, Vikings, what, they're not heckling you. That's just a game. Like, don't be too sensitive. But some of them did get, like, specific, targeted things that are not okay.
Yeah, that's
not
okay.
It's
speaking of ticket prices, by the way, so because Ohio State's going to the national championship,
yeah,
so we're like, what if we go? What if we just be spontaneous and go? He looked up the ticket prices. $2,000
Yeah, that's
for one
right.
ticket.
That sounds about right. Where is the game? Do you remember?
Atlanta.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So,
well,
I was like, maybe they'll go down a little bit. He's like, not enough to where I'm willing to pay to go to that.
That Detroit Vikings game last
week? Yeah.
One of Alex's old high school buddies had a set of tickets that they couldn't go. And they were trying to sell them. And he goes, there's only two. And I was like, I can't do that. Like, even if I, like, splurged, because I think it was $1,000 for the pair.
Yeah.
Which is actually a good deal for Lions tickets right now. Any Lions game past mid-season this year, it's been $500, $600, $700, $800 a ticket.
It's a lot.
It's expensive.
Yeah.
I can't say that that's all the nosebleed sections, but for any, like, decent-ish seat, that's about what you're paying.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I can't do it because it would be Dad, Brandon, and me. Like, I'd be leaving one person behind.
Mm-hmm.
Either I take Dad and Brandon gets left behind, which I would feel bad, or I'd send Brandon and Dad and I wouldn't get to go, or, you know, or me and Brandon go, and but no one would leave my father. He was going. He was getting a ticket, one way or another. But I was like, I can't do it because it would leave one person and that we want to watch it together. Like,
yeah.
So I didn't even offer. I didn't even think about it, but it does haunt me a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, I could have been there for that game.
Would have been
insane. But anyway.
I really want to go to a Lions game at some point.
And my brother in Columbus said he's going to come up if they make it to the Super Bowl. I'm just saying. He said he'll make a special trip up, which I thought was exciting.
That is nice.
So, all the parties. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know how you guys feel about talking about football, but at least we talk about lots of other things. But I guess it's time to talk about Percy Jackson.
Yeah.
If you would like to get into contact with us to talk about football or Percy Jackson or books or really anything, you can do so at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Instagram or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. We've been much better at, like, checking those, not, like, super immediately, but within the 2-week turnaround time of the podcast episodes, you know, try to check in. But life is, you know, busy, and we're doing our best.
Mm-hmm.
There is not a ton of news. I did check, like, the official Instagram account and Rick and, like, the Mythomagic account, and, like, there wasn't a whole lot on there. I even went to, I don't know if they're keeping it up these days, but Updates Percy, their Instagram, and there wasn't really anything new, but on the official Percy series Instagram, there is a little 2024 like picture roundup with some really cute group shots in there of all of the kids kind of on set or just hanging out and stuff. And I really liked that. And it's just cool to see them all like smiling and together. And like, you can just tell that there is this camaraderie between all of them. So I really liked that.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to mention, which I don't remember if we did mention this before. I think we talked about it when it was, like, first announced, but I don't know if we mentioned it since then. The Percy Jackson and the Olympians official cookbook came out in October of 2024.
And, I mean, maybe you've made a 2025 goal to cook more instead of eating out. And if, yeah. In which case, maybe this will be super helpful.
Yeah. And I can't believe that I didn't realize this was out and I, like, immediately want to buy it because it looks really cute. And I really love, like, some of the recipes they had in here. There's a nectar chocolate chip cookie smoothie, and of course it's blue and it looks delicious. I really wonder how good that
does look good.
Yeah, how good it tastes. Sally Jackson 7-layer dip with blue tortilla chips.
Nice.
Love it. But I just wanted to go through real quick the table of contents because it's breads, the rise of a hero, breakfast, the quest begins, lunch, the fork in the road, appetizers, the beginning of the end, dinner, the final battle, dessert, the sweet taste of victory.
That's amazing.
I love it.
That is amazing.
Fried pearls, cyclops eyes.
Eggs in asphodel.
Oh, I love that.
That's cute.
There's a lot of really cool...
Ew, peanut butter and banana ketchup sandwich. Okay, maybe not everything's a winner, but... I'm sure there will be stuff for everyone, something everyone likes.
Yes, yeah, Aries Burger, that's cool.
I want to know what oyakodon is.
Yeah.
I don't
Moussaka.
Know. Moussaka.
That always reminds me of Hades.
Yeah.
Got a
chunk of Moussaka in my throat. And then there's a whole lot of Greek words that I cannot pronounce. Like Melitsanasalata? It's up on the top of, above the dinner. There's Spanakopita. I can't say that. And then there's Melitzanasalata.
Oh.
I don't know.
That's cool. Eggplant dip.
Right?
Interesting. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like this would be
fun.
A cool book because of the Percy Jackson angle, but a lot of, like, Greek foods and stuff. And I love Greek food, so... Yeah, I'm going to buy this. Who am I joking? I'm definitely going
to get You'll have to let us know if you try anything out of it.
And I will post on Instagram if it looks good.
Especially if it's crazy. There is a blue chocolate chip cookie recipe in there.
Yeah.
I may have to make you, like, I don't know if I'm going to buy this immediately, but if you do, I may have to have you, like, scan that page or take a photo of it so I can
definitely
try the cookies. Because blue chocolate chip cookies sound like a winner in my book.
100%. So the last thing we wanted to do for the news and updates section was I saw, and I think this is an older quiz, but I saw that Camp Half Pod posted some stats from one of their quizzes that they made a while ago, and it was a Fatal Flaw quiz, which I thought was really interesting because I don't think I had taken a Fatal Flaw quiz before, like ton of Godly Parents ones,
right.
And like, you know, which mythological creature you are and that sort of thing. But Fatal Flaw was new to me.
I don't think I've done one either.
And so I did already do this and get my answer. I will remember my answer once I get to the end again, but I'm going to take it again anyway.
Okay.
And then I figured, you know, like we've done in the past, we can take it together, which is always fun. And you guys can follow along. If you want to go to Camp Half Pod's Instagram page, then click their link tree, scroll down a little bit, and click on the Fatal Flaw quiz, and it's right there. There are 11 questions, and I will tell you, some of these are thinkers.
Oh, boy.
Some of them are kind of deep. So I thought it was a very, very good quiz. Not one of those BuzzFeeds, like, where the answers, you don't really understand how they can correlate. No, this one's
What's your
really
favorite
good.
Building in the New York skyline?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
If how it's not the Empire State Building, how does it have anything to do with BuzzFeed?
Yeah. Okay, so question one is, Paradise is finally getting revenge, having a roof over my head, temporary, having my nose in a great book, making dinner for the people I love, unattainable, and being proved right all along. I'm probably going to go with having my nose in a great book.
There's two. It's either nose in a good book, because that is, like, paradise. You're completely distracted from your everyday life. You're completely taken into a story. Like, that feels like paradise. Or being proved right all along. Because when someone proves, and they've been telling you you're wrong for a long time, and they finally admit, you might have been right the whole time. It's like vindication, and that is not paradise. So now I'm having trouble. Which one do I pick?
Pick what's in your heart.
I mean, my heart wants to say books because books are paradise. They are. I'm gonna say book. I'm gonna say book, but it could have gone either way.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on.
Choose a Taylor Swift lyric about heartbreak.
Oh my God.
But I knew you'd linger like a tattoo kiss. I knew you'd haunt all of my what ifs. You're all I wanted. Come on, come on. Don't leave me like this. I thought I had you figured out. Can't breathe whenever you're gone. I made you my temple, my mural, my sky. Now I'm begging for footnotes in the story of your life. Drawing hearts in the byline, always taking up too much space or time. And I know it's long gone and there was nothing else I could do. And I forget about you long enough to forget why I needed to. It was so nice being friends again. There I was, giving you a second chance, but then you stabbed my back while shaking my hand. In dreams I meet you, in warm conversation, we both wake, in lonely beds, in different cities. That I'm not a princess, this ain't a fairy tale, I'm not the one you'll sweep off her feet. So this is about heartbreak. Mine is going to be, and I know it's long gone, and there was nothing else I could do, and I forget about you long enough to forget why I needed to. I will have no further explanation about that.
I mean, some of these I actively recognize the song immediately, and some of these I'm like, I don't know if I, like, off the top of my head, I can't tell you what song it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to go with the I'm not a princess, this ain't a fairy tale, I'm not the one you'll sweep off her feet, because I like the rest of the lyrics.
Oh, okay.
Lead her up a stairwell, this ain't Hollywood, this is a small town, and you're in my rearview mirror disappearing now.
Oh.
It's White Horse from Fearless. Such a good song, and it's an oldie, but a goodie, so I think I'm going to go with that
okay.
one.
Okay. Life's greatest tragedy is losing the people you love. People are inherently disappointing. Wishing I had the last say, having so much left to learn and discover, life itself, not knowing what's after, the constant fight for survival. So life's greatest tragedy. Mine is people are inherently disappointing.
Okay, I think it's going to be losing the people you love, whether that's death or otherwise. But part of me wants to do wishing I had the last say. I don't think it's tragedy.
I'm starting to see a pattern here.
I know, right? If only people listen to me.
You might have to take this quiz again.
If only people listen to me. No, but the wishing I had the last say, I don't know if it's a tragedy, but it's like one of life's biggest frustrations. Like,
yeah.
If only I had the last say, then I could have felt better about everything, but I'm gonna say losing the people you love.
Okay.
There's a whole nother Kristen who could take this quiz right now.
In a fit of emotion, you throw something into the fireplace. What was it? A tear-stained letter. Nothing. The fire is warm and the night is cold. The novel I am writing. A token from a now ruined friendship. My partner's half of the plan. I extinguish the fire before it can burn. A signed confession.
My partner's half of the plan. It's just so funny.
It is.
Like, I don't know if it's supposed to be funny, if it's like, his part of the plan was garbage, so I'm just gonna chuck it, or it's like, he was garbage, so I'm chucking it. But I like to think it's just, he's bad at making plans, so I'm burning his side. Like, I'll just make the plans for you. It's okay,
honey. I do like that.
I'm going with a signed confession.
Oh, okay.
Because the number of times I've written things down to tell people, and then I'm just like, nope, and I shred it, chuck it, burn it, throw it away. Because it's good, it's cathartic to get it out of my head. But, yeah. Like, I don't actually want people to know things.
Mine's going to be a token from a now ruined friendship, because I feel like that is something I would do. Like, I need to just, like, burn everything about this and just get rid of it and, like, purge it from my life. That feels the most satisfying to me.
Every TV show, I swear, that I've ever watched, someone's burned something that was from a relationship or someone that used to be important, and I'm always like, don't do it, because you're going to regret. So that's the only reason it's not something like that for me, because I'm the person who's like, shove it in a shoebox, put it far away, bury it, I don't care. But if you burn it, it's gone forever. So, like, that's in my head, that's what I'm telling myself.
All right, question 5. The world is ending. Good. Let it burn. I can stop it. When it does, I will be safe. Is it really ending? How is it ending? I will venture outside and find out. The people I love must be so scared right now. And what can I do about it? So the world is ending.
This is insanely deep.
It is. That's what I'm saying. These are thinkers.
Like, a few of these kind of work all at once.
I'm going to say, is it really ending? Because I'm very much, I think, a skeptic and like to have the information for myself. And, like, it's between that and how is it ending? I'll venture outside and find out. But let's be real. The anxiety in me is not going to let me go outside. I will Google it first. So I'm going to say, is it really ending?
That was
my first impulse was,
oh, yeah, maybe. And I was like, no, I wouldn't go outside.
Yeah.
I'd stay inside. I'd still try and find stuff out. Is it bad that I really am going to choose and what can I do about it? Because I think so often I feel so, like, powerless to change the big things. Like,
yeah.
There's so many little things that we can all contribute to make things better. But, like, more often than not, it feels, everything feels so much bigger than you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how do I fix any of it? Like, so it's ending. What am I supposed to do about the end of the, you know? So I'm going to pick that one.
Okay. Question 6. What words speak to you? When I imagine myself, I'm always leaving. I couldn't draw my own face if God asked. I don't know how to pronounce all of these names. Rilke or Rilke, something like that. I will see the stars for myself one day, even if I have to die to do it. Cat art. What is stronger than a human heart which shatters over and over and still lives? Rupi Kaur. I am heartbroken over no one, over having nobody to wish for, nobody to hope for. Jenny Slate. How do we forgive ourselves for all of the things we did not become? Doc Lubin. You do not have to be wanted to prove you are real. Natalie Wee. I care for you still, and I will forever. That was my part of the deal. And there's no author on that one.
I'm going with, what is stronger than a human heart which shatters over and over and still lives?
Okay. I know for a fact that before I chose how do we forgive ourselves for all of the things we did not become, because that is very much how I feel about daily existence. But huge shout out to you do not have to be wanted to prove you are real. I feel like that's the advice that I need to hear. But that's not how I feel. And
yeah.
So I'm going with how I feel.
Gotcha.
Question 7. I'm having you over for a nice cup of coffee. What do you want to talk about? What wild weather we've been having. You've been moving so slowly today. Are you okay? Have you heard about? Whatever you want to talk about. I'm going to get myself something to eat. I know more about this thing than you. Let me share. Nothing. Today, I would like to think in silence.
I'm going to say, have you heard about? I feel like every time we get together to do the podcast or whatever,
yeah.
It's, oh, have you heard about that thing?
Yeah. Because
there's always something. It's like, is there a book or a movie or a thing? Or, you know. So I'm going to say, have you heard
about? I think I'm going to go with that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to whatever you want to talk about, because that is my, like, next instinct, but
yeah.
Yeah. Question 8. The stranger next to you suddenly faints. How do you react? Step back so that the professionals can handle it. Step back and find another way to be useful. How did this happen? What is the cause? You need information so you can be as useful as possible. You try to help, but you don't have any medical training. You probably should step back. You will be as useful as possible. Do they have family you need to contact? Do they need someone to hold their hand on the way to the hospital? You can do that. Is there something wrong with them or the environment you both are in? Are you in danger? You throw yourself into the situation. You may not be a medical professional, but you have years of reading and common sense on your side. You know what to do. I'm going to go with... I feel like this is giving up, like, a part of my soul telling everybody this. You'll be as useful as possible. Do they have family you need to contact? Do they need someone to hold their hand on the way to the hospital? You can do that. Because it's very much like, yes, I don't want to get in the way, but if there is something I can do that is within my realm of, like, ability, then I'm going to do that.
Yeah, mine, I'm bouncing between, I know I have a tendency to believe that I have expertise that I do not always have. So the last one kind of speaks to me a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like, I watched that on TV. I know what to do. I don't know what to do. But I think I'm going to go with step back and find another way to be useful. Mm-hmm. Because that is, it's also in my skill set is like, something's happened, a bunch of people immediately rush to the thing, and it leaves problems behind it. And it's like, if I can grab everything else, then you can focus on the actual problem. Mm-hmm. So if there's a kid whose mother just stepped forward because she's a nurse, and she needs someone to watch the kid for 5 seconds, you know, like, I can do that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, carry somebody's bag or grab this or, you know, that's definitely more me.
Yeah. Question 9. Ah, my mortal enemy. We meet again. I draw my sword. I will best him in battle. I will find his weakness and dismantle him. I've been waiting for this moment to get my revenge. Actually, he has a lot of trauma. Maybe we should think about that. I'm doomed. I don't think about you, let alone consider you my mortal enemy. I've got to run. I don't remember what I chose.
None of these... are enemies to lovers.
Yeah.
I hate you, but you're incredibly attractive.
Actually, he has a lot of trauma. Could be to that.
A little bit. I'm going to go with, I don't think about you, let alone consider you my mortal enemy.
I think I'm going to go with, I've been waiting for this moment to get my revenge, because I'm definitely, like, the person who hangs back and holds on to things, and then, like, I mean, not that I... This is a fictional world in which, like, clearly we're battling with swords.
Right.
So, if this were that kind of world, I think that's what I would do. And then probably die. Question 10. What is family? A burden. My burden. My entire world. A stable base, but not my destination. Those I care about, care for, and provide for. People I love, who one day may love me. People I love, but don't always like. Again, showing my hand here, I'm going with a burden.
May I also throw a shout out to a burden and my burden?
Yes,
and the distinctly different.
Two very different things, and I chose mine for a reason.
I love how the first two answers for almost all of these are like, very similar, but distinctly different.
Yeah.
Like, it's the enemy one. It's like, they're very close, but there's a tinge of difference. I'm going with those I care about, care for, and provide for, because Karen knows my family.
Yes.
We're fairly close brood.
They're beautiful.
And they're very good
wonderful
people. Not everyone is blessed. I know I am blessed.
Again, I chose mine for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely.
Question 11, final question, choose a Greek god. Zeus, Poseidon, Hades, Athena, Artemis, Apollo, or Hera? I'm obviously going with Hades.
Now here's where I overthink it.
Yeah.
This is about fatal flaws. Which one of these has a fatal flaw that I would not hate to be burdened with?
Okay, like, I think your choice is now Athena.
That's where my brain went. Of course it is. Like, that's where my brain went. I'm looking at these and I'm like, yeah, it's not Zeus or Poseidon, or Hades, or Hera. God, no, it's not Hera. Athena, Artemis, or Apollo. Like, Athena's so booky. She's wise.
And you're also overthinking this.
It's Athena. It's Athena.
All right, what's your answer?
Okay, clicking next. Interesting.
What is it?
Curiosity.
Really?
Yeah. You want to be involved.
I could see that.
You want to be involved. You want to be told. You just want to know more. The means in which you gain your answers aren't always pleasant, and you find yourself so tangled in others' messes you can't keep your own thoughts straight. And in the end, while they sadly whisper at your wake that curiosity killed the cat, you pray and remember that satisfaction brought him back.
First of all, that is a great description. That is really good.
It is.
Also, perfect for you.
I do think so, which
I
is
really
kind of funny.
That's great. Also mad, because I feel like that applies to me, and that's not what I got. And I did get what I got last time.
Okay.
So now I kind of want you to take it a second time to see if you still get that.
All my other answers?
Yeah. Mine is rancorous.
Interesting.
Forgiveness is not a virtue, you know. Once they have wronged you, you will hold your fist to the sky and scream vengeance for the rest of your life. Because you know the truth. People don't actually change. When they show you who they really are, you should never forget. Bitterness and resentment have started a fire in your soul that has kept you safe and warm. Even if it means throwing in your own limbs to keep that fire going, it must stay lit. And I'm really angry because that, to me, does not sound like me, except there are a few instances and a few people in my life that that 1,000% applies to.
Yeah.
And there are some people that are like, yeah, I will never forget, like, the bad things that they said to me. Even if I'm, like, friendly-ish with them, like, I won't forget. So, okay, maybe it does apply. I've just convinced myself. Yours was so much better than mine. Okay, so we both just retook the quiz super fast with our, like, alternate answers that were a close second.
Mm-hmm.
I got something different. Did you get something different?
Yep.
What did you get?
Hubris.
Really?
Okay, so curiosity, I would say, is probably... It's very appropriate for me, and I liked the description of it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
This is my fatal flaw in my head.
Oh.
Hubris. It's not that you think you're better than everyone. You just get things done in the way they should be. Again and again, you've proved that you can do it, so now you know you cannot fail. You laugh quietly watching the people in charge continuously miss mark, knowing that if it were you, when it becomes you, you will be leaps and bounds above them. You know better. You should be in charge. Macbeth thought so too, and that ended up so well for him, didn't it? But like... this isn't wrong. Like,
yeah.
It could be either one, depending on your answer. But I have a bit of that, like, if it were me, I could be doing this so much better. Like, I've always had a bit of that. So,
yeah.
I could see either way. Okay, what was yours?
I really don't like this one either. But it feels perhaps even more appropriate than the other one. I would say I probably switched maybe about half my answers because they were, like, pretty close to...
I want to say that was about me, too.
Yeah.
There were some that I left the same.
Your result. Self-doubt. There's always going to be someone who is better than you, better at doing the things you love, and better at loving the people who mean the most to you. Every step you take makes you feel like you've made the biggest mistake. If the outcome is in your favor, it's because you got lucky this time, and the nonstop mantra in your head chants, but what if... I'm so annoyed by if the outcome is in your favor, it's because you got lucky this time, because the way that I feel that and believe that with my whole chest is like, I don't want to admit it out loud, but I guess I just did.
The funny thing is, I feel like that there are parts of that that I also could feel,
yeah,
like that could be kind of part of my fatal flaw. Like
the hubris one, 100%
right,
felt that too.
So and it's funny because I feel like self-doubt and hubris, when you're reading the descriptions, sound like the opposites. But like,
yeah,
honestly, I feel like they are two sides of the same coin that if you feel like... you know everything, but you feel like you didn't earn it.
Mm-hmm.
You have a bit of the hubris and a bit of the self-doubt,
yeah,
at the same time. So yeah, as you were reading that, I was like...
And really, I think with a lot of these quizzes, like, so many parts and pieces probably feel like they work and they fit, but there's usually going to be one that's, like, really the driving force, the big one.
Yeah.
So that was super interesting.
Yeah.
That was a great quiz. Like,
it was.
Really well done. Thank you, Camp Half Pod, for posting about that. I'm so glad that we got to take it. If any of our listeners take it, let us know what you got, especially if you got something different than the ones we got, because I'd,
yeah,
be really interested in the descriptions of those.
So take a screenshot of, like, the description or whatever, because,
yeah,
yeah, I'd love to see what all the answers are.
Yeah.
All the possibilities.
And I just wanted to say, too, that this was such a perfect fit. You know, we did it again. This was such a perfect fit for this week's chapters that we're reading for Chalice of the Gods, because Percy's fatal flaw comes out loud and clear in this one. If you forgot what it was, you remember between these two chapters. So I guess now it's time to get into that.
Yes, we are talking about Chalice of the Gods, chapters 26 and 27 today. we will be starting with 26. I want to apologize now for any possible insanity that may ensue in the notes that I have written for this, because I did it a little late last night because I got sucked into a book and was reading, and then I realized, holy crap, it's 2:30 and I'm supposed to have done the notes. So if something doesn't make sense, it's because Kristen was very tired, but I think I did a good job. So
you
we'll
did because I read through it and I added a few things that I wanted to mention. Good. But it was very good.
Perfect. Wonderful. Okay, so chapter 26 is entitled I Negotiate the Terms of My Disintegration. So we know we left at the end of the last chapter. It's like time to wrestle. and Percy knows whether he insults Garrus by saying, no, I don't want to wrestle, he's going to be disintegrated immediately. Or he can say, yes, I will wrestle you, and then basically end up disintegrated.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows there's no good choice. He's got to pick one or the other. Either he insults him right away, or he has a chance to maybe do it before he dies. I liked that Percy has time to kind of reflect. In this mulling of his options here, he reflects on Gary and Garrus as a being and what his presence must mean to the gods.
Mm-hmm.
I love this Percy, by the way, in this book, who is so self-reflective and looking at the world around him and saying, I wonder how, what this means to other people. Like, it's happened a handful of times.
Mm-hmm.
And this is yet another where I wouldn't have thought of to, like, look at Garrus and say, the Olympians must hate having him around. Like, he's just a reflection of how old they really are. And we saw the description of just how rotted and decrepit this old man is. And having to look at that, I don't doubt that's why the Olympians... Why he's not known as well, why you don't talk about him, why he's not, you know, the Olympians don't keep him around, they don't want him at the dinner table because he's just a reminder of how old they really are.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this book is so good for how introspective Percy has been throughout it, and it's one of my favorite things about this because... I really, you know, obviously we love the original series and all the ones following it, but they were very plot-driven in a lot of ways. And this feels a little bit more character-driven in that, yes, he has a quest and a goal to complete, but along the way he's learning so much about himself. And it's not that he didn't do that in the other books, but because there's, like, a little bit of a slower pace, a little bit of not quite, you know, world-ending stakes here, you get a little bit more time for him to reflect on, and the fact that he's older, for him to reflect on everything he's already been through and stuff. So, like, this book, it could have been a money grab, a cash grab,
you know?
It could have been just to do it, just to promote the TV show. But I think Rick actually gave us something so wonderful that still fits within the whole world of Percy Jackson. It doesn't feel like it's stepping out of it at all. It gives us a little bit more insight into him after everything he's already gone through. And it's just, I love it so much. It's just so good.
You're absolutely right. Like, the first series is so plot-driven, and we get moments where we learn things about Percy, we learn things about Annabeth, but a lot of it is, like, we learn through their actions or through what they say out loud
so
to someone else.
So much happens to them that
they're
just scrambling all the time.
Exactly. So, like, watching how they handle those situations, you inherently learn things about the character. But, like, being in Percy's head in this book, he's... Again, it's not, the stakes aren't life or death every second of this quest. They've had downtime in between, you know, stops to kind of think about things. And Percy, as he's considering his options with Garrus, is like, what is, you know, looking at this guy, this has to be really hard for the Olympians. Like, he's taking the time to think through exactly what he's facing. And it's just so, it's so much more mature. And I'm loving Rick getting a chance to do this. I also think this is a little bit after The Sun and the Star, and, like, being able to kind of look at those, right after writing that.
Oh, yeah.
With, why can't I think of Mark?
Yeah.
After writing that with Mark, I think maybe seeing the way Mark writes characters has kind of helped him, like, want
this
to shape
way more
the characters more three-dimensional. Like, his characters were always three-dimensional, but, like, it gives them even more depth. And, it's just really cool. I love,
because you think, oh, wow, Mark Ashiro, who's a talented writer in his own right and has done plenty on his own, gets to write with Rick. And you don't always think, Rick, this person who has sold so many books, who is so popular, who has been in the industry for so long, you know, you don't think that, oh, maybe he can learn something too. But he did. And the fact that it's so easy to see that in the writing, I think is really incredible. And, like, again, we love Mark Ashiro, and shout out to them for, you know, all the stuff that they brought to Rick, because it's only just making his writing better, which I didn't even think was possible, but...
I mean, like, as a more unknown than Rick, which is every author except for, like, 10. as an author less known than Rick, it had to have been, like, really exciting to be like, I'm gonna learn things from Rick Riordan. Yeah. Like, this is so cool. But, like, it's more... I would say it's even a bigger compliment to, like, look at Rick's writing now and be like, Mark had an impact here.
Yeah.
Like, I hope Mark is seeing that. I hope he reads this book and sees that there is a change, because I do give a lot of that credit to Rick writing with someone else and seeing how Mark does things and, like, seeing how that, yeah, it's right there. Yeah. You can see it. It's so cool.
And the best part is that this book still remains so funny and so lighthearted at times, like, so Percy Jackson in that, like, very essence of him. And this chapter in particular, I wanted to write down, like, every line. It was so good.
So witty, so yeah. smart, but so Percy.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't lose the Rick Riordan voice. It just got turned up a couple of notches.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But so, the line where he was like the painting in that story about the guy who never ages, but his portrait does. Earl Grey?
I love it.
It was so funny.
I will say, I'm so glad Karen went in and added, like, a bunch of the funny, like, quotes. I didn't want to put any of them in because I didn't want to accidentally yours.
Yeah, I knew.
But I was like, there's so many good ones. Like, I don't want to put them in the notes. So I'm so glad you did, because, yeah, there's so
many.
We've
been doing this long enough.
We know how it works.
Yeah, we're on the same page.
Love it so much. So, so much. Okay, so Percy ultimately, obviously, agrees to wrestle Garrus, but he has conditions. He has conditions because, of course he does, but he also wants to buy as much time as possible to try and think through this problem in front of him, because he believes there's gotta be a way. Like, it's not just, I'm gonna wrestle this god and lose and be disintegrated. Like, Percy wants to believe there is a way to get through this. So he buys himself some time by bringing up his conditions. So Percy wants to make it clear that if he loses, only he gets dusted. Uh-huh. Only he is going to be disintegrated. Annabeth and Percy, or Grover, will be free to go. It's a deal breaker. That has to be okay. And Garrus is pretty quick to agree to that. Doesn't seem too much of a deal breaker for him. He says that's fine. So then Percy goes to clarify the terms of winning, because what is beating Garrus in this wrestling match? Like, there's a wide variety.
Smart of him.
So smart.
Like, he's trying to waste time to, like, you know, think in the background, but it's also so smart. Like, he's been through this a time or two.
It's the terms of the deal. You have to get the terms of the deal specific enough that you know when you've won and when you haven't. So, yes, if Percy gets Garrus's knee to touch the ground, Percy wins. However, if Garrus gets Percy's face in the pavement, Garrus wins. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely... it's to try and even the scale just a little. Okay, and then the third condition was that Annabeth and Grover must be free from the spell that Garrus currently has over them. He's been manipulating old age time. You know, we talked about this in the last chapter, where it felt almost like Kronos's manipulation of time. Percy's saying, I want to be able to see and hear them and say goodbye if that's what I need to. They have to be free for this wrestling match. And Garrus at first seems a little upset, like he doesn't really want to release them, but ultimately he concedes and lets them free. So they race over, of course, as soon as they see what's going on. As soon as Garrus releases Annabeth and Grover from the current, like, frozen status they were in, Annabeth races over and quickly... it just illustrates that she is the brains of this outfit. Mm-hmm. Percy is a thinking man now, and he is doing a lot of thinking, but that does not mean that Annabeth has been upstaged, because
gets there so much faster.
Yeah, and Garrus sees it plain as day. I think he even says something like, I should have started with this one. But yeah, so, like, love Annabeth. While Annabeth is seeing what Garrus is putting on the field here, she's catching up very quickly. Grover distracts and occupies Garrus so that she can have a couple of moments with Percy to talk. And it's the most Grover of Grover things.
I love it. Just the descriptions alone. He writes, Grover was wielding a black sesame mochi donut like a shuriken, which is hilarious to me. I can just imagine it. And then later says, Grover hefted his pastry like he was ready to go full donut assassin. And I feel like full donut assassin is like a title of one of our podcast episodes. Like, it's something
right, it
you
is.
Would say.
Yeah, it totally is.
Oh, so funny.
Oh, Grover. So yeah, Grover gives a healthy distraction while Annabeth talks to Percy. She asks Percy, do you know who's wrestled Garrus in the past? Do you know what you're up against? And Percy knows that it was Hercules. And she goes, yeah, but Hercules fought Garrus to a draw, and that was considered winning.
Mm-hmm.
And he only used brute strength. There was no trickery. There was no nothing. You can't do this, is what she's saying. She's like, I love you. You're not Hercules.
Yeah. Also, shout out to Percy forever being salty about Hercules and what a chump he is and how annoying he is. Because even though Hercules, like, as like, a feature in Greek mythology and the movie and, like, the TV show back in the day, like, I loved all of those so much.
Oh, yeah.
But there's something so satisfying in Percy hating Hercules so much. And, of course, Hercules in the Percy Jackson series is... He's not a fun guy to be around.
No, and he's always the one who came before.
Yeah.
If there's ever a hero that they're talking about, it's always Hercules.
Yeah.
And Percy's always like, oh yeah, gotta love Hercules. Like, nah, he did it first. Yeah. Like, no. While this is going on, Percy is thinking about the situation. Again, this is another one of those perfectly illustrated moments where we know that this book especially, the stakes are a little lower.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the world at stake. It's Ganymede being cast out of Olympus. It's mm-hmm. Ganymede having to suffer the wrath of Zeus. That's what's at stake here, as well as Percy's letter of recommendation.
Right.
But he takes a moment to consider whether this is worth fighting for.
Mm-hmm.
Do I just not care about the chalice and tell Ganymede, I'm sorry, I couldn't do it, and figure out another way to get a letter of recommendation? He even considers asking Garrus.
Yeah.
So maybe he'll write one for me, and, yeah, you know, that'll work. And he really gives it a moment and says, like, am I doing something worthwhile here, or should I just, you know, throw the towel and say, this time I couldn't get it done? But ultimately, he respects Ganymede's wishes, and he respects that Ganymede doesn't want to let Zeus and the other gods down. He wants to get the chalice back for Ganymede because he asked Percy to do it.
Uh-huh.
And that's, like, as simple as that is, that's Percy's modus operandi.
Yeah.
I was asked to do this, and I was asked for a reason, and I'm going to do it because of that.
Yeah, because right now, like, he just wants a letter to get into college, and now he's facing death. Like,
yeah,
literally, he is about to die if he doesn't win this stupid wrestling match. And I think that, you know, he wouldn't be Percy Jackson if he gave up, but I think that it's very much realistic that he's like, okay, is it worth it? Like,
yeah.
I mean, do I really need to do this? Because I'm about to die, and that kind of defeats the whole purpose of trying to get into college and be with Annabeth.
Right.
First of all, shout out to the hilarious line, putting aside the fact that every god chose me for every quest, I felt obligated to keep my promise. And this is what I wanted to talk about, because Percy's fatal flaw is loyalty. Specifically, like, personal loyalty to, like, his friends and stuff. But this is the perfect example of that, because he's about to die for basically a god who kind of doesn't really care that much about him, but Percy knows that this is the right thing to do because, yeah, he was asked to do it and he agreed to do it, so he's gonna do it.
Yeah.
And he's putting his life on the line for that, and that's why it's called a fatal flaw, because he very well might lose his life in a few seconds.
It's going to put you in situations of great peril, because it's the one thing you're not willing to sacrifice
mm-hmm.
to save your own life.
Yeah.
I would rather die trying to do the right thing for Ganymede than say, I'm not doing this.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is. Perfect illustration of Percy.
It's a good thing, it's a good thing Percy has plot armor. Like, he's never gonna die.
We know he's surviving this book, so
yeah.
How the heck is this about to work? Exactly. Like,
yeah.
This is why I read romance, is because I know that the ending is not going to be horrible, the reason I can read this book and not panic is I know that Percy, Annabeth, and Grover are all going to survive this book some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
So it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Like, I can get through this book.
Because, yeah, with romance, first of all, it's just like candy. You could just eat it all the time, every day.
Dopamine rush every time.
That's why last year I read 103 books. Maybe five of them weren't romance.
Percy.
Like, yeah.
Like, at least
I don't even know if I put that on there, to be honest. But yeah. Maybe like a Rick Riordan book or
right?
something.
Right? Like, one or two of them may have been a
Rick
book.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it is nice knowing, like with romance, you know you're getting the happily ever after, or at least the happy for now.
Right.
And that makes it so much easier. So, yeah, I mean, I was stressing a little bit because I was like, wait, how is he going to trick him?
Same.
How is he going to win this? But I knew it would be fine.
Right. In the end, this is going to be okay. I can't tell you how this is going to end, but by the end of the book, we have to get to a point where we can get back to the story. So
Right. It's
not going to be the end of the universe here.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's still, if I were a brand new reader, this would be very stressful.
Yeah. Imagine just picking this book up blind, not knowing anything.
Or if you've read the first five and you haven't read Heroes,
yeah.
So you're now going into this because it's the next, you know, in the what's the word? Numerical? No.
Chronological. Yeah.
It's the next book chronologically, so you pick it up to read it and this would be stressful. This would be very stressful.
Yeah.
Anyway, I also have to point out that after Percy makes the decision to do this, even though Annabeth's warning him, there's no path through this. I don't have a path for you. Grover tries to barter for the chalice with Garrus with donuts, and it almost works.
It does almost work. He thinks about it for a second or two.
Like, I wonder if they had enough donuts,
yeah.
if it might have actually worked.
Maybe.
So, moral of the story, always have donuts. At this point, Percy has made the decision. It's time to start this thing. It's time to get going. And he asks Garrus, when do we start? And Garrus tackles him to the ground, almost pushing his face into the cement, and says, whenever you'd like. And that is the end of the chapter.
Yeah. Yeah. Moves pretty fast for
right?
a guy.
Little wily guy. Doesn't look it, but he definitely is. Okay, so let's do our favorite lines and our favorite moments from this chapter. Karen, do you want to do yours first?
Yeah, mine is literally the first line of the chapter because I just thought it was so funny. Because at the end of the last chapter, Garrus asks Percy if they have an agreement. And that is like the last line. And then this chapter starts with, in the demigod business, we call that a trick question. And I was like, yep, there's a lot of those when you're a demigod.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, that was so good. Like, to start the chapter, it's the perfect Perseism. Like,
yeah.
Guys, this is a trick question.
Yeah.
Okay, mine is Percy thinking about Annabeth and what Annabeth talks about him. It's so cute. Okay. It made me uneasy when she called me Percy instead of Seaweed Brain. It meant we were way beyond the point where she needed to criticize how dumb I was being.
Yeah.
It's like, when Annabeth doesn't call me Seaweed Brain, it means that this is life or death stakes.
This is serious business.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I love them. I love them so much. Okay. Favorite moments, Karen?
I really loved Percy understanding that the gods dislike Garrus because they all love to look young and beautiful, and he reminds them how ancient they actually are. And I also really liked Percy's reaction to Garrus, like how Garrus physically made him feel. He said he felt claustrophobic in his own body, his palms were sweaty, he felt like this panic, and that is like fear of death. That is fear of growing old and dying, and the fact that just being around this god physically made Percy feel that way. I thought that was, like, a really clever thing to, like, bring to the page in the atmosphere of, like, what was going on in the scene.
Absolutely. I have to point out, when you said palms are sweaty...
I know.
I almost went, knees weak, arms are heavy.
I know. It took everything inside me, Kristen, not to follow up with that. I was like, focus on the story. Just keep going. Just say it.
This little half smile on my face, and I'm like, don't say it. Don't say it. Don't distract her.
I was like, don't look in Kristen's eyes, because it's going to happen.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Anyway, my favorite moment was another one of Percy's introspective moments, where he takes the time to reflect on the possibility of just letting Ganymede down and walking away from this, because is this worth dying for, is the question here. It's like, Percy, you know, you've got so much to look forward to and to do. Why are you doing this? And ultimately, it's because loyalty is his fatal flaw.
Yeah.
And he will die rather than be seen as someone who won't do the thing they said they'd do. Rather than, you know, letting somebody down. So it was such a good moment.
That's why it's called a fatal flaw, not kind of a big flaw, but, you know, whatever.
It's one of those flaws. It's an important one. Okay, so chapter 27 is entitled, My Dying Words Are Super Embarrassing. So the fight has begun. Garrus has tackled Percy almost to the dirt with his face, but he manages to push back enough and get himself in a better situation. Throughout this wrestling match, as Garrus is definitely physically stronger than Percy, and Percy is having trouble even budging him an inch or two, Annabeth and Grover yell comments, and Garrus gets annoyed and calls it interference. You can't have interference. And I love Annabeth's comment about it's commentary. Every sport has commentary. Wrestling always has commentary because they're not trying to interfere, but I can see that Garrus, like, believes it's interfering. Like, yeah. He's so mad about that.
He's a grouchy old man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Don't bother me while I'm destroying this person. Yeah. Like, how dare you? Garrus punches Percy, and Annabeth and Grover are quick to yell foul play. Like, this is not wrestling. Like, we don't punch in wrestling. And it's just, the match between them is very one-sided. Garrus is manhandling Percy all over this playground area. And Percy's, you know, he's trying to figure out the other way. Percy, we know that's how Percy works, is he knows there's another way. He's heard it from enough gods at this point that you have, you know, when you can't physically overpower someone, you have to outsmart them. You have to think of how to get around it. It's also worth noting that Percy realizes Garrus is amused by Percy's attempts to beat him at this, and he uses that as a way to stay alive a little longer. He allows Garrus to be amused by Percy's, you know, completely futile attempts to get out of this hold or that hold.
One thing all gods have in common is hubris. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they kind of like playing with the demigods a little bit, and that usually means Percy Jackson can get a one up on them.
It gives him that little crack of the window that allows him to sneak out. Absolutely. So Percy takes these opportunities to think about how to defeat old age. Not how to overpower Garrus, but Garrus represents old age. And how do you defeat old age? And his first thoughts are antioxidants, crossword puzzles, and fiber supplements.
Yeah, I'm not going to say how many of those apply to me, but just know if you're 30 plus like us, then you're in the right place, and there's no shame.
Right. And everyone should be eating fiber.
Yeah.
I mean, supplement or naturally, everyone needs
crossword
fiber.
Crossword puzzles are fun.
And antioxidants are good for the skin. So Percy first tries to think about, you know, how to defeat old age. He then kind of pivots to his old standby, which is water.
Yeah.
I'm going to destroy this man with water because I'm Percy Jackson, son of Poseidon.
Mm-hmm.
And he tries to summon water. He knows where he is. He knows there are two major rivers not that far from him. And he tries to summon it, and he manages to launch a manhole into the air all the way on the other side of the park.
Yeah. So why do you think this didn't work? Is it because of how Garrus is, like, making him feel? Because he feels like he's a little bit weaker right now. He's kind of panicked. Or do you think that it had something more to do with, like, the time stoppage thing?
I mean, I think the time stoppage thing is what my logic initially went to, because if Garrus has that much power over, like, Annabeth and all of them, and we know he released Annabeth and Grover, but he didn't release anyone else.
Right, right.
Like, everything else is still under that stoppage power that he had before. So I could only imagine that, like, the bounds of where that influence is where it popped up.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe the water's still rushing in the other places, but it stopped. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
So, like, all you can see is the one that's being affected outside his sphere of influence.
Yeah.
That was where my brain went.
Yeah. That does make sense.
Yeah. After Percy's futile attempt to use water to his advantage, Garrus is eager to now just end Percy. So he picks Percy up and chucks him across the playground. Annabeth screams, and that scream affects Percy so viscerally that it wakes him up, and he smooths out his landing, grabs the... It's like a monkey bar kind of climbing apparatus. He, like, grabs the bar and swings himself back, and he says it, like, wrenches his shoulders. He feels every inch of the pain of that, which I think is just to illustrate how hard Garrus threw him. Like, we know he's strong. Like, the whole wrestling match proves that, but, like, the force he threw him with was enough to really just, like, mess with Percy's entire body.
Yeah. You kind of forget how strong Garrus is until Rick starts talking about how he, like, bends the pole that they're, like, leaning against.
Yeah,
and all of that kind of stuff. But I loved this part because, once again, Annabeth and Percy's connection, just like in House of Hades, like, it's that connection that keeps them going for each other. And... oh, I love whenever Rick can, like, put little hints of this in any of the books.
Yeah, absolutely. That scream and its effect on Percy angers Gary even more, and he warns that any more interruptions will immediately get them, all three of them, turned to dust. He's done. He's not playing anymore. No more commentary from the peanut gallery. So, we're not going to let them talk anymore. Percy taunts Garrus to come after him and not Annabeth. And Garrus does just that. He charges at Percy. He pushes Percy back against the tetherball pole. And that's where you were talking about, like,
yeah,
that bend.
It bends.
He's causing real pain. Percy is in a lot of physical pain already. But when Garrus is using his force against him, Percy really comments on physically how draining the pain is.
Mm-hmm.
And that triggers Percy to think about all the pain that it's going to cause Annabeth if he dies here. Interesting to note, he sticks to Annabeth. He doesn't think about his mom or Paul or his unborn sibling or anyone else in his life that he cares about. Grover, Chiron, anybody.
Yeah.
It's just Annabeth. He starts reflecting on the life that they could have if he survives this. Like, he hasn't yet thrown in the towel, but it's so painful that he's thinking about how this is not a quarter of the pain she would feel if he dies here. And it's reminding him to think about their future and to think about what it would be like to grow old with her in New Rome, or, you know, go to New Rome together and have that experience before they eventually find somewhere safe to be where they can grow old together. And as he's remembering that, he gets strength back in his legs. He feels stronger, it hurts less, and it starts to put pieces together. Percy specifically remembers Jason's advice about not losing sight of the vision of a long, happy life. It gives you something to live and fight for, and therefore strengthens you to keep going.
I cried at this part. It's so hard not to cry about Jason.
It is.
Just because you know the whole story now.
Especially this.
And, yeah, and it's just like, oh man, you know, it's that, like, left hook that you don't see coming that Rick throws in there every once in a while. You're like, you really just had to bring up Jason, didn't you?
My friend Jason.
Yeah.
Just casually, my friend Jason. Like, that's not a knife to the heart. So, it's at this moment that Percy realizes the futility of fighting old age. He, instead of fighting Garrus, which he's been doing this whole time, he realizes that maybe fighting old age is not the answer. You need to embrace it. So he decides to literally do just that.
Mm-hmm.
He hugs Garrus, and it's like, wait, what? And that's where the chapter ends.
Yeah, it ends on his, because remember, the chapter is titled, "My Dying Words Are Super Embarrassing," and his dying words to Garrus is, "I love you, bro."
So good.
I literally laughed out loud when I read this. It was so funny.
Same. I was like, really, Percy? Like,
this is what you said.
I love that, like, I was going to say not to get deep, but I guess that's kind of the point, and we do that a lot anyway.
It's getting deep, Dave.
Yeah. So, Rick is so good at writing these funny, silly, ridiculous stories that, you know, there's a reason why we still read these books, because there's such a, like, I think they're funny regardless of my age, but, like, the deeper parts of it that maybe children wouldn't quite understand as thoroughly as we do, that's what really gets me, because here, he's literally giving us life advice, which is that you're probably gonna get old and die. I mean, I hope you get old and die and not the alternative.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no point in fighting it. It's gonna happen, so you might as well embrace it and think about all the good things that living an old life can bring you, just like Percy does when he thinks about Annabeth going gray and the wrinkles on her face and them smiling and being surrounded by children and grandchildren. Like, yes, getting old and, you know, death getting closer is scary, but, like, there's a lot of wonderful moments to live before that time, too. And I just love that amidst all the ridiculousness of him wrestling an old man in a loincloth, he can still fit something so beautiful in here that really kind of hits you in the heart and reminds you of something outside of these pages, like something much bigger that has to do with living life and, you know, all of that kind of stuff.
Like, as silly as it sounds, for Percy to relate the human struggle against old age with, I should stop fighting Garrus and hug him instead.
And say, I love you, bro.
It sounds insane.
Yeah.
This is not the way, but we don't know how this is going to turn out here. Like, we will find out in the next chapter.
Yeah.
But, like, right now,
are you mad that it stopped right there?
Yes. I was furious. It's like, seriously, like, I should have seen it coming, but, you know, I didn't. But, like, it's just, it sounds so ludicrous, but it is such a profound moment. Like, Percy has, he's made that decision that so many people can't make.
Mm-hmm.
To just be like, old age is not something to be afraid of. It's coming for all of us, hopefully. And, you know, fighting it is just going to cost you money and stress and time and energy that you don't need to be expending on avoiding old age.
Right.
Like, sure, if you don't like your hair gray, dye it. Nobody cares. But, like, you know, fighting that, all of the things that come with old age, it's like, it's not worth it. Just embrace being alive and each time as it comes in your life. Like, you and I are closer to 40 than 30, and...
Okay. You didn't have to bring that up. I liked when I was still 35 and you were closer to 40.
Well, it's the truth, though. Like, I am way closer to 40. But, like, we're closer to 40 than 30. We're starting to tip toward adult. 30 was not enough of an adult for me.
Yeah,
but, like,
I mean,
we're tipping to you're an old person as opposed to you're in your, you know, your midlife, you're in that 20, 30, 35, you know, you're in those ages, which are still considered young by most people. But, like, once you hit 40, people start to kind of think of you as...
You're, like, a real person.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you're not still in development.
Yeah.
You're a person now.
I still feel a little bit in development.
You're supposed to have it together. I'm definitely not gonna...
No, I mean...
unless the next 9 months are transformative, I'm not gonna have it together by 40. So, you know. Anyway. But that is where this chapter ends. And it's abrupt. And I am not a fan.
Yes.
So we will get back to that story and the answer to what happens next in the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have favorite lines and favorite moments to tackle. So I will have Karen do her favorite line.
Mine was when Percy said, "As long as I amused him, he seemed content to let me make an absolute fool of myself. Fortunately, that was on my list of superpowers." Because that's so Percy Jackson.
Right. I really did enjoy that quote so very much. Mine is from a little bit earlier in the fight, and I think it's when Garrus first kind of tackles Percy and is holding him, and just Percy's having trouble moving him even an inch. And he's talking about Annabeth and Grover, and Percy says, "Their distraction bought me a few seconds, which I'd like to say I used to formulate a master plan. Instead, my thought process was, oh gods, I'm going to die, help, ow, armpit, armpit. This falls short of the criteria for master plan."
That last line especially really, really got me.
It's so perfectly Percy. I just, oh, so many good quotes in these chapters. Like, so many.
Reading this book just makes me so happy. It just reminds me all the reasons why I love Percy Jackson so much.
So very much. Absolutely. Okay, so what did you pick as your favorite moment?
Mine is Percy really feeling that because he's a demigod, old age is truly a gift many of them don't receive, and that makes him want to embrace it, both metaphorically and literally, in the form of Garrus. But I thought it was really clever the way that he, you know, went about trying to figure out another way to defeat Garrus, but also the fact that Percy is excited about growing old and is wishing for that because so many of his friends and stuff, like, probably won't be able to do that. So I thought that was really beautiful.
Absolutely. Mine was Percy taking time to consider all the things humans use to fight off old age, and he really looks at them as if any of them could help him here. Like, the fiber supplements and the this and the... Like, he really takes a minute to say, can any of this help me with him?
Yeah.
Like, maybe if I give him some fiber, he'll be less grouchy.
Yes.
And he won't want to fight me. Like, he really gives it a second. Like, you can see it all running through his head. Like, maybe antioxidants? Does he just need dopamine?
Yeah.
You know, what can I do? And I love that he takes a second. He gives it a moment to see if there's anything that can help him. It doesn't end up helping him. He ends up moving on and trying to come up with something else. But it just, it was such a funny thing. And it's a great moment for him that I couldn't help myself. Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Instagram at Prophecy Radio Podcast or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us and our episodes on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and we really appreciate it. You can leave us questions, comments, ideas for content or episodes you want to hear from us. We love hearing from you guys, so please let us know if there's something you think would be really cool, especially if you have more quizzes for us. If
yes.
you find a cool quiz, something we haven't done before, we would be happy to do quizzes because we love those.
Yeah,
so
they're really fun.
Oh, yeah. We do have some feedback this week, so I'm going to throw it back to Karen to hear from Solomon.
Yeah, Solomon messaged us on Instagram again. Thank you for that. And he recommends Shadows Over Camelot as a board game. He says that it has a traitor aspect like Betrayal at House on the Hill, which you guys might remember I hated.
Warning.
But you can play it without that aspect. And he said it was really fun, and there were like some, it was just like a really unique game. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. If I ever come across it, might have to give it a try. He also asked if there was an index with the episodes that correlate with Chalice of the Gods, and we don't have anything set up like that on, like, the website or our social or anything like that, but I can do that on Spotify. I started doing that with the earlier books when we were reading, like, the original series and stuff. I can make a playlist of just the chapter episodes. That's actually really easy to do, so I'm going to put that on my to-do list for this week and throw that together for you guys, especially as we're coming to the end of Chalice of the Gods. It's probably good for, you know, because we did jump around a little
yes.
bit. We had the show in the middle of this and then, of course, the break and all
yeah.
that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I think that's a really good idea, and I'll try to do that for the other ones, too, like Red Pyramid, especially when we get back into that, and it'll make it a little bit easier if you guys want to, like, jump around a little bit.
Okay, so that wraps up this episode. Next time, we'll be talking about Chalice of the Gods chapters 28 and 29, and it will more than likely come out on January 29th, which I thought was funny, and it made my brain think of, the fact that we'll be reading
29,
and it'll probably
yeah.
come out on 29.
Okay.
I may have messed with my head for a second. I was like, wait, we're reading 26 and 27, so 20, wait, what? And, yeah.
I just looked at that and went, that's almost February. Like, that doesn't feel like February is that close, but we are, you know, almost halfway through January, so.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. Craziness. And by that time, we will have read Onyx Storm, and we will have seen Roland Shaw on TV. Sorry, for those that don't know what I'm talking about, Rule and Shaw is it's a book called Rule by Jay Cronover. It's one of my favorite romance books from when I first started reading romance, and they're making it into a movie, but it's only in theaters for 2 days. It is a true blue, like, romance. He's a tattoo artist. It's, you know, it's not super dark, but it has a little bit of, you know. So if that's something you're into, check it out, because it's only out for 2 days. Like, I believe it's the 20th and the 21st or something mm-hmm. of January, so... If that at all interests you,
yes.
please go check it out, because, yeah, it will hit streaming after that, but they were shocked to even get 2 days of
That's
a theatrical
awesome.
Release.
That's really good for them.
It's Yeah, I'm so excited. I can't even tell you. but yeah, and we're going to read Onyx Storm, which we have not talked about, but whew, it's getting closer.
I'm stressed a little bit, but yeah.
All right, we'll let you guys go. Until next time, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio signing off. Over and out.